Good morning. You're listening to The Beacon. Saturday morning to you. You are listening to The Beacon. This is Lainey Kleeman here, and
on the other end is Brian Hawkins there.
Ha ha ha. How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Good.
A little queasy because this is the first time in 2 weeks that I've had to work five full days because of the holidays, now that they're over. However, there is another holiday, Monday, in observance of Martin Luther King Day.
There is, and you know, my son had to go back to his rigorous kindergarten curriculum this week. He was dreading it, so I've been telling him all week to get him through the week that he has Monday and Tuesday off next week from school. So he's been hitting the grind too. He feels your pain, my friend.
Why did I get Tuesday off?
In service day.
Maybe I can sell that to the powers that be in the lighthouse.
Take a little in service day. Why not? I'm sure they'd buy it. There's no red tape to get through.
No. So how do you find yourself this week?
Really good, actually. Something very interesting happened to me. I'm not sure if I mentioned this on the air or not. I think I did, but I wanted to get involved in prison yoga. Did I talk about that on the air?
Yeah.
And so I'm leery. What's that?
I'm leery.
Why?
I don't know.
It'll be interesting.
In prison, you, a bunch of men,
well,
criminals.
I don't think I'll be there I'll backtrack on that. I had my meeting this week with Prison Yoga Chicago, which is the organization that provides classes for those who are incarcerated. And so I've been onboarded, and I start my shadowing. I have to shadow three classes, and then I'll be put on the schedule to teach my own classes. So I'm starting my shadowing next Saturday. I will be in my first jail yoga class.
Can you say which one?
Well, it's all Sacramento, California. So everything takes place down there. There's different divisions within the jail down there. So there's one primary place in Chicago, and they have different... Why are you looking at me like that? I'm trying to explain it.
I know, because you said Sacramento, California, but then
no,
you said Chicago.
The streets. Oh. Sacramento and California. Sorry, that probably was not clear. No, your expression was totally justified. No, so there's one jail at Sacramento in California.
Oh, yes, there is.
Yes.
I've been there many times as a jurist.
Oh, okay. I'm really glad you added that little caveat. So anyway, I start next Saturday, and once I shadow three classes, and I'll be put on the schedule. And ideally, we do partner. You know, we do teach with a partner, so that will be the goal, but I guess it's not always the case, according to the gentleman that I met with on Monday. It could be that somebody calls in sick, or there's just nobody else available to teach that class, or anything can come up. So it will be an adventure, but one I'm tremendously excited about. So it's a whole new, whole new world.
Good luck to you.
Thank you.
I can hear it now. Hey, Blondie.
I know.
Look this way, honey.
Well, I did meet with, I met with two people on Monday. One was a young woman who was very attractive, and I did ask her about that, you know, because, of course, the stereotypes in my head are exactly what you just highlighted, and she said she's never had a problem. So, you know, I'm going in there with an open mind and an open heart, and we will see where the experience leads. And
that's
all I have to say about that. So I won't have feedback next Saturday because I won't have done it yet. I'll be doing it that day. But in 2 weeks from today, I will certainly let you know how it goes.
That should be interesting.
I think so. How about you? What's new with you? What's shaking, hot stuff?
Nothing really. Same as always. I don't know. I had a car incident. I was pretty upset.
What happened?
Well, nothing big. I just had the car repaired. And then yesterday, one of the warning lights came on. So I have to go back all through that. But other than that, everything's been fine. Just readjusting, getting back into the swing of things, manning Chris Radio and handling the show and all those things.
Yeah, after the holidays, it's always a little rough the first couple of days back. But, you know, eventually we get back into the swing of things.
Yeah.
But speaking of your car incident, I I had a mechanic who I loved. I loved dearly, and I don't know anything about cars, so I'm certainly at the mercy of the mechanic who is fixing my cars, to be honest. And so I've been going to this guy, or it's a whole business. I've been going there for a couple of years, and I've always been very happy with their work. And then, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 months ago, I went in because my back brakes were out. They were, like, grinding. It was awful. It was a terrible noise. And so I got my back brakes fixed, and while I was there, they told me that my front brakes needed fixing as well. And I was like, well, I'm not going to do that right now. And the guy's like, oh, okay, but you're going to be back here in a couple weeks anyway. And I was like, all right, well, then I'll see you in a couple weeks. That was 5 months ago. And I went and had my car tuned up at a different place a couple, like last week sometime. And I had them ask them to eyeball the front brakes. And they were like, well, front brakes look good. And then I was thinking back on another experience I had with this mechanic where my starter wouldn't start. Like, I was having trouble. Sometimes my car wouldn't start, and sometimes it would. And so I took it to the mechanic, and he called me. And he's like, it is starting just fine for us. Like, we can't identify the problem. It's starting fine. We can't fix it if we don't know what the problem is. But we found all these other things wrong with your car. Oh, that's going to cost you $800. And I was like, well, okay, like, go ahead and fix all those other things, because might as well. So they went ahead and fixed all those other things. And then I got the call. Oh, your car wouldn't start this morning. It is the starter. We figured out it's going to cost you another $600 to fix it.
Oh, my gosh.
So, you know, and I was like, I mean, at the time, it didn't even, like, resonate with me that it was shady. But looking back with the brakes thing and then this, I'm like, maybe these guys really are just, like, putting me through it. I don't know. So I don't think I'm going to go back there. I don't feel good about both of those incidences. I just feel kind of like, that's not, that just doesn't feel honest to me at all. So anyway.
That's kind of tough, you know. I don't know. I've gotten to the point now with cars where I make them explain everything and even show me what they're talking about. But
I think that's a good idea.
A lot of times. And then I always ask the question, well, can I drive it like that for how long?
Right. And of course, they always say, you know, oh, it's imminent. You should not leave the lot without, or
yeah,
you should not leave the...
Another thing is, you can also get a second opinion.
Right. Which I think from here on, I mean, I just don't like to, like, spend the time. You have to pay for it, the diagnostics, and then it's more time. Like, I don't have 2-3 hours a day to take my car in and not have it accessible, you know.
Right.
I tend to kind of blindly just, like, nod my head and be like, okay, whatever you say, just get it done. But I think I'm going to be a little bit more cautious moving forward. You know,
well, maybe I'll give some tips off the air.
I would appreciate that would be nice. Thank you.
All right, so what do we have today? Well, Shalini and Tom,
I like how you answered your own question there.
Oh, okay. Well,
go ahead.
They're from the Build a Better Book Project at Colorado State University. And you know what they do? They create tactile books for the blind and also for children.
Lovely.
Mm-hmm.
That's so, such a nice thing for them to do.
And Sandra sat down and talked to them about that. So that'll be the first interview that we have up today.
Sounds good.
And then we've got other things in store planned for everybody, including the Off Factor and Luke's Laboratory and some of the things along the way.
Basically, that means that we don't even know exactly what's happening.
Well, you know.
When we say that there's a surprise for you coming up, that also means it's a surprise for us.
Well, there's just so many different elements to choose from.
Totally.
We just want to fly by the seat of our pants, and as it comes up, whatever appeals to us at the time, we go with.
It's like a recipe and just sprinkling it with love. Like, we don't really know what's gonna come out. We don't know how it's gonna bake up, but we are gonna put the best ingredients into it.
And what feels right at the time.
What feels right at the time, and serve it up on a platter of love.
That's right.
And with that, let's go ahead and dive in.
Okay. You are listening to The Beacon here on WCPT 820 AM.
The Lighthouse Endowment Campaign is an ongoing campaign to help secure the future of the Chicago Lighthouse for the 67,000 plus patients, clients, and families that utilize our services each year.
Being a veteran here, I think, has helped me. I could not see, because this is why I initially was brought here by a counselor from the VA, because, like, we didn't collaborate with each other and help us to get our vision better. When I first walked in here, I didn't know the life of a blind person. I actually didn't know. And when I came here, I walked through the door and I could see how people, so, you know, they act like they could see. And it was so inspirational to me. I cried like a kid when I first got it because I was overwhelmed to see how people can deal with blindness, you know. And the Lighthouse really, really has helped me with a lot of things because I've learned to be more knowledgeable about computers. And they have an exercise class that they teach us how to exercise. So every fourth Friday of the month, we have a luncheon where all the seniors meet. We sit there and talk about different events and different things. And my greatest passion right now is being on the radio, reading to the blind. That's my greatest passion. I really love that. Number one is to be able to give back to people that can't see, because I was overwhelmed. And I promise God within myself that I will do this until I cannot see again. This is my greatest passion in my life.
Historically, our endowment fund has helped maintain critical programs on the verge of shutting down, preserve jobs in times of economic stress, and meet the growing demand for vision care services among America's aging population. To make a contribution, please contact Jennifer Miller, 312-997-3643.
Well, everyone, a lot of us, myself included, and I'm sure a few of our listeners who are blind, we're very familiar with tactile graphics, you know, essentially illustrations that are made in raised line drawings or in different tactile objects. And the Build a Better Book Project, they have been working on this specific area, making tactile books for children who are blind or visually impaired for a few years. Today, joining us to talk about this project are Stacy Forsyth. And can you pronounce your name again?
Yes, Shalini Menon.
Good. I'm glad I didn't butcher your name.
No, you're fine.
Welcome to you both. And how are you today in this bright and early this morning? How are you doing?
We're doing great. Thanks so much.
Good. Well, Stacy, can you start off by telling us a little bit about the project, the Build a Better Book Project?
Sure. The Build a Better Book Project began as an outreach component to an effort on campus. We're based at the University of Colorado Boulder. Mm-hmm. And we began working with an initiative called the Tactile Picture Books Project, mm-hmm. which was based in Tom Yeh's computer science lab on campus. And Tom and his team have been working for several years on using 3D printing to fabricate tactile, more accessible books for children who are blind or visually impaired. And I'm actually based at an outreach group on campus called CU Science Discovery. Our focus is on working with youth to get them excited about STEM and STEM careers. And we were really excited to begin working with Tom and his lab to see if we could connect the kids in our program, as well as kids and teachers in the community, to the Tactile Picture Books Project to see if we could help the students develop engineering and design skills as they worked on designing materials for this effort. So we're now working with both schools and public library makerspaces to engage youth, both youth who are sighted as well as youth who might be blind or visually impaired, in designing tactile materials for children.
Mm-hmm. Now, as I mentioned earlier, you know, a lot of us who are blind might be familiar with the different raised line drawings, you know, maybe that are in Braille textbooks, Braille and math and science textbooks, rather. But what kinds of materials, because I know that your projects use different materials, including 3D printing. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly. We use a range of different materials, both low-tech and higher-tech materials in the product. So in working with makerspaces, we find using even craft materials has mm-hmm. been a really exciting way to engage youth in this effort. So things like craft materials from wiki sticks and
That's exactly what I thought of. But also using
3D printing so that uh-huh. objects that are designed or kind of book elements that are designed can also be replicated at other sites. So there's an easy 3D printing is a relatively affordable way for us to make multiple copies once a design has been created. So a group of students in one site might be able to design an object, but then students at another site could download and replicate at their own site.
And you read my mind.
We're also, although the project began with 3D printing, we've also been working now with audio elements as well. So working with teens who are learning about circuitry and sound design so that they can also add audio elements to enhance books and make them more interactive.
So in other words, it's a tactile and an audio project in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so far those are the main areas that we've been working with.
Shalini, I know that you were very involved, you know, as a child, you have been exposed to tactile graphics. Now, you know, you're very involved in the Build a Better Book project. Do you think that your early exposure to tactile graphics, did that spark your interest in, you know, math and science and in the Build a Better Book project?
Oh, definitely. I think the fact that I was exposed to tactile diagrams and was able to, you know, feel like I could construct them and also and understand and also, like, excel at those subjects really made me feel like, okay, yes, I can do this. And I really wanted to be involved with the Tactile Picture Book Project because I see that there are a lot of, there's a lack of, you know, blind people who are studying, you know, STEM subjects, and I really want to contribute in my own way and see how we can make these subjects more accessible and make and, you know, attract more people with disabilities to take part in these subjects because I think they have a really vital role to play.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, people might say, you know, oh, you can just describe the drawings or the pictures to people who are blind. But, you know, I think that tactile graphics, you know, give us, I guess, if you will, a better picture. Why do you think, in your personal experience, why do you think tactile graphics are so important?
I think that just as a sighted child or a sighted student uses pictures to understand a certain concept, for example, a graph, you know, you can tell exactly what's going on just by one glance. I think the same way for someone who can't see, they need to feel what's going on, and that's such a powerful thing to convey. And in fact, I think my tactile diagrams, like, I think it benefits sighted people too because I would show like my tactile models to other students in class, and I would use them actually to tutor my sighted classmates, and they would say, "Oh, like we understand this so much better now," because I think there's a certain element of like doing things hands-on, like creating a diagram, putting it together, building it. And when you have when you have that in your fingers, then you kind of have it in your head as well.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that's such a terrific point, and it's one that we've heard from a lot of teachers and other and librarians and others that we've met with about the project. I think although this project initially began with this idea of creating tactile picture books for children who are blind, A number of individuals have spoken to us about the value of this type of tactile experience for children who might have other types of learning disabilities or might have trouble learning to read or trouble learning language. And so it's been exciting to think about how these materials might be used, not just by the blind community, but also by kids with a range of different abilities who might really just enjoy interacting with this more interactive type of book.
What are the project's near future plans?
Yes, actually we're hoping to expand the program. So we've been building an online platform so that libraries in other states can use some of the project guidelines, some of the kind of workshop ideas and best practices that we've been working on refining over the past couple of years so that they can do the project at their own site. Mm-hmm. We're also building essentially a platform where students who design products can then share what they've designed with others so that it's possible not just always to start from scratch, but to possibly download and modify and change other people's designs so that we can continually build on what other people are creating and contributing to the project.
Stacy, how can people find out more about the Build a Better Book project?
Our website is buildabetterbook.org, and from that website, they can find information about the project as well as some of the project guidelines and links to the online platform where they can contribute to the project. And it'd be great to have makers and other states start working on and contributing their designs to the project as well.
Yeah, well, Stacy and Shalini, thank you so much for joining us today. Shalini, I hope I didn't butcher your name.
No, that was perfect. Well, thank you so much for having us.
Thank you both, and best of luck to the Build a Better Book project. This is the Lighthouse Beacon. We'll be right back.
Today, the unemployment rate for veterans is at an all-time high, and these brave men and women need our help. To meet this challenge, Paralyzed Veterans of America created Operation PAVE, an employment assistance program for any veteran at the Hines VA in Chicago. Through a partnership with Agility DGS, these services are provided free of charge. Hiring more veterans is great for business and great for our nation. To learn more, visit OperationPAVE.org. A public service message from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
I feel like it's all on my shoulders. How am I going to take care of my parents if they develop an eye disease like glaucoma? Glaucoma is the leading cause of blindness in African Americans and Hispanics in the United States. And what about my kids? Will they inherit it? Not to mention my risk factor. I'm really concerned and I need some answers.
Call 1-800-437-2423 or go to ahaf.org for answers, including a free brochure on glaucoma.
Welcome back to The Beacon. You are listening to Lainey Kleeman and Brian Hawkins this Saturday morning on WCPT 820 AM. Mr. Hawkins, what do you have over there for us? We've got some stories to share with our peeps.
Yes, I think it's something we have an interview coming up. Brett did, and Brett's under the weather, by the way, so he wasn't able to do his normal reviews this week with Sandy. But he did record an interview before he took ill, so just a little under the weather, nothing serious, too serious, I hope. The thing I wanted to mention this past week was the Golden Globes. Mm-hmm. And
do you watch it? Do you watch award shows?
Well, I just watched the Seth Meyer monologue, mm-hmm. just to see how they would handle the whole sexual harassment thing that's been happening in Hollywood. And he did a lot of jokes. I think his best joke was, well, from my perspective, he mentioned that Oprah Winfrey was going to get the Cecil B. DeMille Award. And then he said, and that's a big honor for Cecil B. DeMille.
Well, Oprah was certainly the woman of the night, wasn't she?
Yes, and she got a lot of press this week, everyone speculating on whether or not she should run for president. Some folks saying she should. Other folks, like the New York Post, said Nopra. And, of course, the venerable Seal, who hasn't had a hit in how many years?
It's been a long time.
Yeah, he said, no, that wouldn't be good. She's been part of the problem for decades. So I don't know where people fall on that, but from what I understand, it got decent ratings. And I don't know, I haven't seen any of the movies.
I don't believe I have either, actually.
Yeah. I'm a big movie fan.
Yeah, you are. That's true. You know, I used to be big into the award show. Like, I grew up wanting to be an actress. And so for years, I would just be, like, glued to award season. And now it just feels, I mean, it's just not my thing anymore. We'll just keep it at that. It's just not my thing. But yeah, there are some great, like, Three Billboards Outside of Billings, Missouri. I believe I really want to see that one. Frances McDormand is one of my favorite actresses.
Yeah, she's really good.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it looks like there's a lot of good stuff out there that I'm sure we'll have plenty of time to see. Because, mm-hmm. you know, once award season gets rolling, they really hype all that stuff up.
And the thing about it is that mentioning Hollywood right now, because last week we had an actor on who was legally blind appearing in a play at the 16th Street Theater. And folks should go out and see that. And this week, Brett did an interview with two gentlemen who have an outstanding casting call for looking for actors who are visually impaired. So I thought we'd run that right here and now. And so here it is.
Hello, everybody. My name is Brett Shishkoff. I have with me Adam from CSA, and he is actually going to talk about an open casting call that is actually going on nationwide. How are you doing today, Adam?
I'm doing well. I'm great. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well also. I was wondering, can you give a little introduction further of who you are and what you do with CSA?
Sure. I'm actually employed by the Goodman Theater in Chicago. I'm a member of CSA, which is the Casting Society of America, which is an industry organization for casting directors across the country. And so I'm a member there and a host of the Chicago call.
Okay. And so with this open call, what exactly are you looking for? It's an open call for people with disabilities, correct?
That is correct. Yes, we're opening our doors. The call is being held at the Goodman Theater downtown. We're opening our doors to actors with disabilities to come in and be seen by a panel of casting directors local to Chicago. And this panel is sort of a mix of theater, TV, and film casting directors who will be there to meet new performers that perhaps they have not met before and potentially consider them for future projects. This is a national effort that we are a part of, and so all of these auditions would be captured and then uploaded to a national database where they would be accessed by other casting professionals across the country.
Okay, so then if, say, it was me and I was coming out, what exactly do I need to have prepared ahead of time for you guys? Do they need to have a song, or is there a specific piece that they have to have ready to go? Why don't you go in a little bit more detail on that?
Sure. What we've asked is actors to prepare or bring a scene, and we've been deliberately open about what that scene comes from. You know, is it from a screenplay? Is it from a TV film project? Is it a play? But basically a two-page scene that they have prepared, and they bring that in. We provide a reader, and that section of the text is performed and recorded. There may be an adjustment given. There may not, but no monologues or songs.
Okay, so then you're looking for people with any type of disability. Would this be for stage use, or is this going to be for film, TV, or all of the above?
All of the above. I mean, the idea is to try to give casting directors tools to be leaders in the diversity conversation and effect real change in our studios and the entertainment industry as a whole, and that includes theater. We want to challenge unconscious bias, and so that's where this idea came from in terms of having an open call for actors that maybe don't have the opportunities to be seen or historically haven't had the opportunities to be seen, is to really make an effort to change some of that.
Yeah, I've noticed that there's a few shows out there kind of highlighting veterans and other types of disabilities. Is this a new wave of interest that the theaters and production companies are looking into, trying to broaden more different types of subject matters, getting maybe people aren't used to being around people with disabilities, and this is just to try and become more mainstream of knowing how to interact a little bit better and seeing how we are able to be out and about and do the same things that everybody else is able to do. What exactly has spurred on this interest in people with disabilities specifically? Do you know?
I don't know that, you know, I think the interest comes in CSA's desire to continue to expand everyone's knowledge of underrepresented communities.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it be actors with disabilities or actors who are identify as transgender or gender nonconforming, or actors of color, or you know any community that is underrepresented in sort of is offered less opportunities. We wanted to try to be proactive, and I'm speaking more from my own personal experience. In that, you know, if we wait for each project to tell us what we're looking for, how can we then offer up maybe actors who maybe the script doesn't necessarily call for a performer, or the character doesn't have a disability, but why couldn't an actor with a disability play that character?
Mm-hmm.
So as casting directors try to challenge perceptions of directors, of producers, and sort of put really exciting talent forward, they need to know who that talent is.
Right.
So it's sort of a constant effort to stay aware of underrepresented communities, and I think that's what this call does. It helps us become more and more aware of talented people out there that maybe aren't getting seen.
Very good. I do have a couple more questions. One is if people wanted to look up when and where they can come and join you guys. I did hear you say that the one in Chicago is here in, at the Goodman, but if people wanted to look up some more information, where can they go for that?
Yeah, the best place to go is the CSA Inclusion and Diversity page on Facebook. So if you do at CSA Inclusion and Diversity is the homepage. And there's a lot of information on there and links to the multiple calls being presented all across the country. So, yes, there's one in Chicago. They're happening all over the place. So depending on where you're, you know, if anyone listening to this, for example, is not in the Chicago area, there are similar calls being done all across the country. So I'd encourage people to go to the Facebook page to get the information on their area.
Do you have that address? By chance?
Yes, at CSA Inclusion and Diversity.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Adam, for joining me. I really enjoyed this topic and conversation with you today, and hopefully we'll get a lot more people out there, and you guys will find some talent.
I have no doubt we will. I'm really excited to meet a bunch of new actors, and I was really pleased to see quite a few actors that I'm already aware of coming in as well, so it's going to be an exciting day.
Very good. This is Brett Shishkoff, and you're listening to The Lighthouse Beacon. We'll be right back.
Are you among the millions of Americans eligible for the extra financial help available to meet Medicare prescription drug plan costs? For Medicare beneficiaries with limited income and resources, the extra help will pay most of the cost of monthly premiums, annual deductibles, and prescription copayments, an average of $2,100 in extra help per year. Sign up for the new Medicare prescription drug program has begun and will run through May 15, 2006. So there is still time to find out if you qualify for the extra help. But you need to act now. For more information, visit the Social Security website at www.socialsecurity.gov. That's www.socialsecurity.gov.
Well, we're back, folks, here on The Beacon. I'm Brian Hawkins, along with...
Lainey Kleeman.
Yes, and coming up, and now with the new year, of course, there are a lot of fundraisers that The Lighthouse is having to raise funds for various things. And the next one, I believe, that's coming up is Sweets for Sight. And this is an annual event that is hosted by the
Chicago Lighthouse Junior Board.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And it takes place Thursday, February 1st from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. And it's at Carnival, 702 West Fulton Street in Chicago. $55 in advance, $65 at the door, and then $500 in advance if you'd like to book a group of 10 people. And all tickets include one complimentary drink, heavy hors d'oeuvres.
Not sure what heavy is implying in this context. But
I wonder if that means a lot of hors d'oeuvres, yeah, or that you get one that's really big.
Really heavy. Really heavy hors d'oeuvre.
And then, of course, plenty of sweets. So it's one way to start off what could become a two-week celebration of Valentine's Day.
I didn't realize that was a holiday we like to elongate. But hey, to each their own.
Well, it might be moving in that direction.
All right.
All right.
Whatever
and
works.
The proceeds go to?
Proceeds will benefit directly the Lighthouse programs for children who are blind or visually impaired. The Chicago Lighthouse has a comprehensive set of programs for children, including the Children's Development Center, Preschool for All, Birth to Three Early Intervention Program, and the Youth Transition Program.
Mm-hmm. And there are also sponsorship opportunities. You could be a truffle sponsor, a tiramisu sponsor.
Mm.
I love tiramisu.
So do I.
Bonbon sponsor or a praline sponsor.
Ew.
Yeah. Now you're probably wondering yourself, well, how do I do that? Well, contact Lindsay Inglis, who's a senior manager of special events at the Lighthouse, at 312-447-3448. Again, that's 312-447-3448. Or you can email her, lindsay.inglis, I-N-G-L-I-S, at chicagolighthouse.org.
What's the spelling on Lindsay? Because there's a lot of ways to spell that one as
really?
Well.
Mm-hmm. That's L-I-N-D-S-A-Y.
All right.
So just think Lindsay.
Lindsay.
Yeah, and you could get all the information, and we'd love to have you come out and engage your sweet tooth.
I would love to engage my sweet tooth.
You're a big sweetie.
I love sweets. Yeah, I do. They're my arch nemesis.
Yes, well.
I won't be there that night, though. I'll be out of town, so I won't be tempted. Temptation will be eliminated altogether.
No, we'll save you something.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
All right. Now, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, the highlight of the show.
Aww.
It's time for The Awe Factor.
Thanks, Brian. So today we're talking about a waiter who provides excellent customer service to his customers and was greatly rewarded in the most unexpected of ways. Most of us do appreciate a food server's exceptional service. Food service is a very difficult industry. I worked 3 months in food service, and it was the most stressful 3 months of my life. So I have the utmost respect for food servers. And when they go above and beyond and provide exceptional service, then, you know, they certainly earn a little something from me, for sure. So there was a customer by the name of Edward Pollard who went out of his way to repay his food server, his waiter, for his consistent kindness and just always going above and beyond. So Pollard frequently comes to a local eatery for lunch during work. And every time he does, he requests a specific waiter because of the man's wonderful service. And Pollard says this gentleman takes such pride in his work. He is always extremely polite and conversational, the kind of person who instantly puts a smile on your face. Pollard also noticed that this man, on his way one day working, coming home from work, Pollard saw him walking to a bus stop. And he says, I've seen him walking in the blazing summer heat, and I have seen him walking in the harsh, cold winter to and from the bus stop. And no matter his circumstances, when I see him at work, he is always upbeat and a joy to be around. So this inspiring outlook on life encouraged Pollard to do something kind for his waiter. Instead of leaving a hefty tip on his meal, he, guess what he did?
Brought him a dinner.
Better. He bought him a car. So he made sure the automobile was parked outside the restaurant, and he called the waiter out and said, do you see that car right there? That's your car. And the waiter, it doesn't say his name at all in here, but he was instantly crying and just so gracious and so thankful for the generosity of Mr. Edward Pollard. And it just once again reminds me that, I mean, certainly you don't need to go out of your way to buy somebody a car, but even small gestures of kindness, the waiter who goes above and beyond every day, you know, or just being kind to the people that you interact with is an important part of, I don't know, making life better,
yeah.
I think, you know.
Wow.
Yeah. So our friend, Mr. Edward Pollard, in the generosity out of his heart, rewarded his very kind waiter with a car. So he no longer needs to walk in the heat and the cold to and from the bus stop to work every day.
That's
and that
nice.
Is this week's The Awe Factor.
Aw, that's a nice story. I wonder if they'll make a movie out of that. They made a movie out of the waitress who was given the lottery ticket or something like that, or someone shared a lottery ticket. This is many, many years
ago. Oh, yes, Bridget Fonda and Nicolas Cage, right?
Right, exactly.
Well, what was that called?
I forget.
I remember that movie. That was kind of a fun movie.
Yeah,
that's
so
right.
This is kind of along the same lines. Maybe that guy saw that movie, and either that or he's in a... Watch a lot of Oprah Winfrey.
Maybe. So who knows? Either way.
Give away a car. That's so nice.
The kindness of his heart.
Didn't say what kind of car.
You know, I watched the video. It doesn't... It was a used car. Like,
Still.
It's certainly... It's going to get him to and from work and
right.
probably make his life much, much easier from here on out.
So. Oh, well.
Yay.
Two guys that are coming up who often make many people who are visually impaired life easier.
Find the segue. It's there somewhere.
It's coming up. I was getting to
you
it.
Got
I was
it.
Getting to it.
You got
but,
it.
You know, before we get to that, speaking of making life easier, I've been reading, you know, I go on the internet and I read a lot about what's going on, and there are just tons of all different kinds of robots being created.
Oh.
You know.
Is that good or bad?
I don't know. I think for some people it is good.
Until they take over the world.
Yeah, and I was talking to Brett, and he seems up for it, you know, especially the cars that drive.
Self-driving.
Self-driving, yeah. I saw where there's Sony has developed an intelligent robot pet. And so now it's about, how big did they say it was? 30 centimeters, so about 1 foot. It's a long hound-like machine, comes complete with flapping ears, and its eyes are made of a cutting-edge light-emitting display, and it can show various emotions. And it's called Abo, and it's fitted with an array of sensors, cameras, and microphones, and also internet connectivity. So, obviously, there are guide dogs, and Brett has a guide dog, but I was wondering if, in the future, they could create robot guide dogs. And this might be
the start,
the beginning of something like that.
I would imagine that that could be something that would be a possibility one day. Does this one that you're talking about, is it functional in terms of, does it do things? Or is it just kind of like, hey, I'm a pet and I'm here and I'm wagging my tail at you?
Well, owners can play with the pet remotely via a smartphone and even teach it tricks from the office for the faithful hound to perform when the master gets home or whenever you're with it. It also builds up a character by interacting with people. While not always submissive, it is friendly towards those who are kind to it. And
those who are not kind to it? Is it vicious? Will it attack?
Probably. Yeah.
Whoa!
See, that's where the danger comes in. It's like,
I know.
Who's going to be programming these things?
Even if they, I mean, someday if robots have like human intelligence capabilities, that's what kind of freaks me out about all this.
Right. And even the machine, it learns. And that, therein lies the problem. Because if you've ever seen any of those robot movies, if they develop their own intelligence, then we could be in trouble. But it learns and it's stored in the cloud, so its character can be preserved even in the event of hardware damage.
I have to say this all just totally freaks me out. Like, everything we do is just being captured and stored. It's so unsettling to me.
Yeah. Well.
I mean, if there's ever a functionality of a robot as acting as a guide dog, I think that could be beneficial to a lot of people. I think having an actual dog is part of the benefit of having a guide dog, like that love and companionship and friendship of having a live being with you is, a nice part of it. But, there's some people who don't qualify for a traditional guide dog. And so this may be a functional substitute, which could be very helpful in the grand scheme of things and the general sort of, space of it all.
Yeah.
It kind of freaks me out.
Yeah, well, it costs about $3,000
for
a three-year package. And that includes software services like data storage and that kind of thing. And Sony rolled out the first generation dog in June of 1999.
Oh.
And they sold about 3,000 in about 20 minutes.
What?
Yeah, and at that time it was $2,200. So I guess the one that they have now.
It was 20 years ago almost.
Yeah.
They haven't had any rollout since 1999?
Well, they probably have. They've been improving them. But that's why I guess the article is titled Old Dog, New Tricks, because they've upgraded it.
Interesting.
Yes. But we're getting way further into technology than I was hoping we would, but that's fine.
But it's all right. It's a nice story about a robot dog.
Now, let's revert to the experts.
I'm Juan Suarez, and let's open up Luke's laboratory with Mr. Luke Scriven. What's up, Luke? How are you?
I am doing great.
And for all things technology, hardware, software, and things of that nature, what are we talking about this week with technology?
So this week I'm talking about something pretty exciting, which is called Relumino. And I'm thinking that probably means to re-illuminate or something along those lines. And this is a device by Samsung. Now, I'm going to say straight away that it is still in the development stages. And so it's more of a concept than an actual guaranteed product. At this time, they have talked about it a bit at the Consumer Electronics Show, which has been going on this week, and there was a little bit of buzz about it last week as well. And Samsung have got a part of their company which specifically kind of develops exciting new technologies. So it's like a think tank kind of area where they just put cool stuff together and see what they can do. Now, this specific product, the Relumino product, the concept is kind of similar to some things that we've seen before and that we've talked about on this show in terms of different electronic glasses, okay? So I know we've talked about the Iris Vision, we've talked about the eSight, and the New Eyes and various things like that. So these things already exist, you know, you put these glasses on, you're able to zoom in on things, you can change the color of things and so on and so forth. So it's taken that concept, but from their concept kind of models that they've made up, they are making it much more fashionable and much more discreet. And so previously the headwear for the electronic glasses has been kind of bulky and it's kind of made you stand out and things like that. But with the Samsung one, it's really just looks like a pair of Ray-Bans, which is kind of awesome. So, and they even have different colors as well from what I've seen. So, you know, the fashion conscious can get whatever color they like the look of. So you've basically got this pair of sunglasses and there are video screens built in on the inside and there's a camera in the bridge. And what's happening is the glasses are taking in the image from the camera and wirelessly sending it to your smartphone. And on your smartphone, an app is then applying all sorts of different things to that image and sending it back up to the smart glasses. And so again, you're going to have these glasses on, you're going to be able to zoom in on things, you're going to be able to change the contrast of things. They have this cool feature which is making the outlines of things bolder. And so I don't know if you've ever seen animation where they have like thick black lines around the characters and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Something similar to that kind of idea. And another thing is remapping the image to an area of the retina which has not, which you know still sees well, which isn't damaged. So for example, for somebody with advanced glaucoma, who has vision loss on the peripheral on the periphery of their vision, but the central vision is still good. With these glasses on, you can take the image and shrink it down so it fits right on that center area of the retina where the vision is still good and different things of that nature. So it's really exciting. Like I say, it is some stuff that we've seen before, but the really good thing about this is Samsung who are making this. And Samsung, they're a huge electronics developer. They have a ton of products out on the market already, smartphones, you know, in particular that people will know about, but, you know, TVs and fridges and everything else you can imagine. And a big company like Samsung getting on board with low vision technology has a lot of, interesting implications. I expect that if this product does come to market, the price will be low. If you think about the glasses, for example, with the camera in, well, I'm sure that camera is going to be cameras which they're already sourcing for their smartphones. The glasses with the screens in, the screens I'm sure are going to be from screens they're already sourcing for their smartphones, and they can command very good prices on those because they buy so many of them, and that allows them then to charge less for their products. And the rest of it is really being powered by a smartphone, well, they make smartphones, and, you know, by an app. So I really think that they're going to come in at a competitive price, plus they have so much development power behind them. It could be, you know, absolutely groundbreaking in terms of what it can do and, you know, how well it works. So definitely something extremely exciting and one to keep an eye on. Now, unfortunately, there's no guarantee that this will come out to market. Oftentimes we see products come from companies where it's kind of a conceptual thing, but it never actually makes it to market. For example, Google Glass, that's a big one in the not too distant past, which was like that. However, I'm really hoping that they follow through on this and release a product, hopefully, you know, in the next year and a half. And I really hope it works as well as I think it will do.
This is WCPT 820 AM. I'm Juan Suarez, and we are with Luke Scriven inside of Luke's Laboratory for another Saturday morning.
I'm not a big Chicago sports fan, unfortunately, but I am aware that this weekend is the Cubs convention. And interestingly, the Chicago Lighthouse, we actually have a stall at the Cubs convention. So we have a table there and we are going to be selling our Chicago Lighthouse clocks, specifically four of our fashion clock line, which are Chicago themed. We have got two Wrigley Field clocks. And we also have a Chicago flag clock. And we also have another one as well, which escapes me at the moment, but some really cool Chicago-themed clocks. And I encourage anybody who is a Cubs fan and who has got nothing to do this weekend to visit. It's at the Sheraton Grand Hotel. And I believe the convention hours on Saturday are going to be really long. I think it's 8 in the morning till 7 in the evening. And on the Sunday, I think 8 in the morning until midday. And yeah, people should definitely come and check it out.
All right. Yeah, that's this weekend for all the Cubs fans. And again, you said you do have a specific clock for Cubs fans, right?
That's exactly it. We have the Wrigley Field clock. So it's the Wrigley Field sign. And it's got, you know, the Cubs as the World Series winners on there. So there's two different designs of that. There's a white bezel and there's a silver bezel. And both of them look really great and would make a great gift for yourself or for any other Cubs fans who are in the family.
And was there a customer of the week?
And I do indeed have a customer of the week this week. And this is a customer that I went out to visit on Thursday. And he lives in Rockford, so I took a little drive out there. And he basically had decided that he wanted to purchase one of every different type of device and try and learn how it worked. So I took a whole kind of Christmas bag full of goodies for him to try out, and we sat at his place and we tried out an Iris Vision and a Magnalink Zip CCTV and an Orcam and a Explore 5 handheld electronic magnifier, so a bit of everything. His vision is he has macular degeneration and his vision is deteriorating, but he's determined not to let it slow him down. So he's trying every avenue to you know, keep him doing his job and keep him being independent at home and things like that. Extremely nice guy, very friendly, very willing to give things a try, and like I say, he's not letting his vision loss stop him. So yep, I thought he was a good customer, and I really enjoyed spending time with him.
And Luke, before I forget, let us also find out how they can get a hold of you for any information on any of these products or information.
Yep. So if you would like to call me, my direct telephone number is 312-997-3649. And you can also reach me by email, luke.scriven at chicagolighthouse.org.
That does it for another edition of Luke's Laboratory. I'm Juan Suarez.
I started at the Lighthouse when I was still in college at UIC. It was 2012, and I worked here until about 3.5 years, until the middle of 2015. This is a GPS unit. It's a portable GPS receiver. When I was here, I did a lot of one-on-one training, but for this sort of stuff, I mean, I just, you know, do it on the phone and things, but I would walk people through. We'd go out in the community and actually work with it, you know. I never saw myself working in blindness until I worked here, and I started working with Tom Persky, and really, I had used technology and utilized blindness technology for myself. So coming here, I was able to start, you know, learning and working with technology, and really fell in love with it. Pieces were in place for the Lighthouse to work with the call center, but some of the accessibility needed to be assessed. And I was able to, you know, go through the standard training curriculum. And when I went through that, I was able, you know, to assess where the needs were and where the various pieces were that needed to be worked on. One result of the tollway project was not only to make that system accessible, but to show that we were opening doors for, you know, the future of blind people and working in and around this area, and you can take that to a national level as well. So we were opening doors here in Chicago with this specific tollway project, but we can then, you know, shift that to opening doors for the totally blind population across the country or around the world. What I really think said so much about the Lighthouse, I was upstairs in the call center and my house burned down, but most of my personal possessions were melted. And I had taken 2 days off, which I didn't ever really take any days off. And I just, you know, I had told my boss and just said, I really need to sift through everything here and try to figure out what's going on. And I came back to work, and there was a pile of money, and there was a coat, and that was my Lighthouse family was there. That was my call center. And I was the only male in that room. And it was such a great environment to be in. There is no way I would be there if it wasn't for the Lighthouse. I'm positive, I'm absolutely positive. Not just when it comes to work or anything like that, but just being able to develop, you know, those professional skills. I mean, the communication, the emails, the everything it takes to really hold a real job. I mean, and when we talk about employment for blind people, it's about getting into the real world and holding that salary position, and it's not easy. And I never would be there. There is no way I would be there if it wasn't for the Lighthouse. I wouldn't consider it to be a stepping stone. I would consider it to be a launch pad. It was a way for me to launch myself forward and upward in anything, you know, that I chose to do.
The Lighthouse Endowment Campaign is an ongoing campaign to help secure the future of the Chicago Lighthouse for the 67,000-plus patients, clients, and families that utilize our services each year. Historically, our endowment fund has helped maintain critical programs on the verge of shutting down, preserve jobs in times of economic stress, and meet the growing demand for vision care services among America's aging population. To make a contribution, please contact Jennifer Miller, 312-997-3643.
Wonderful program for folks.
A wonderful program. Mm-hmm. Delightful as always.
Yes, full of excitement and
intrigue.
All right.
Yeah, that was great.
All those things. Now back to reality.
Yep, here we are. Thank you very much to our contributors to the show every week, Sandy Merlot and Brett Shishkoff, and we certainly wish Brett a very quick recovery. I hope he's feeling better and it's nothing too serious.
Yeah, he should be back next week.
All right, cool. Many thanks as well to our president and CEO, Dr. Janet Slick, who has pioneered for us since day one. Well, whatever you do, stay warm, stay safe, and we will see you next weekend.